Off the Ball, GAA.
Somebody's going to win and somebody unfortunately is not going to win. And we had a lot of days against Armagh. They're very, very special.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
All right, it is bang on 8 o'clock this morning. We'd love to hear from you. 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. A reminder, we are live every morning with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. We want to capture one of the stories of the summer so far, and that is the renaissance in Louth Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say Gavin Devlin joins us now. Gavin, good morning to you. How are you?
How are you keeping?
It's been, for us on the outside, it's been an epic summer so far from a Louth perspective. You're bang smack in the middle of it. So what's it actually like at the moment for you?
Yeah, I suppose, Jerry, the last 2 or 3 days in Dundalk and Drogheda and RD and all the towns around Louth, it's been something that I'd say a good number of people didn't think they'd see would the day would arrive and come. But yeah, it's just been euphoric and the energy, and you just see the stuff on TikTok and social media, and the energy has been about the county, like it's just amazing. And yeah, it's just riding the crest of a wave at the moment, really.
It's really mad how results dependent something like this is, because obviously there is a rich seam of Gaelic football history running through the county, and there's incredible work has been done clearly over the last, I don't know how long, probably forever, but getting it all marshalled to a situation where everybody's ready to take advantage of that and understands what the opportunity is. And then, you know, there's a swing one way or another in the game and that euphoria disappears. It is so mad that, like, this one thing could be the bursting of a dam.
Yeah, Mickey Hart back in the day mentioned it many a time to the players. I can recall about, you know, it's amazing that the players can, you know, have the power to make so many people happy and within the county. And there's people that lives their life from one end of the week to the other just to see the result of a football game at the end of the week. And, you know, you can make so many people's lives better, and so many people are going through difficult times and difficult periods for so many different reasons. But, you know, our boys, and it's right across the from the top to the bottom of Ireland, that players just got the power in their hands to make so many people's lives better and happy, and even if it's just for a moment or whatever. But what we've seen in the last few days, honestly, Ger, it's so important now that Louth can use this moment to maybe catapult us on to another level. And so it's not just one good weekend or one good year, that we can really build from this, if that makes sense, Ger.
Totally. And I think, people aren't familiar, but you've got massive games coming in the under-20 and the minor championship over the next week. So it almost feels as if the senior team is maybe the top of the pyramid, and that the foundations are clearly very, very strong coming through as well. So when did all that begin, Gavin? When did you become familiar with the work that was being done at underage level, even before you took your current role?
Yeah, look, there was always good work going on, and it's probably just a matter of aligning that work, Chair. And yeah, you're right. At the top of the pyramid is the senior team. I think that would be suffice to say right across all counties. You know, they're the shop window. They're the team that everyone looks to, and there's really good work going on underage. But it's so important at the very top that, you know, we stayed in Division 2 to begin with. At number one, we had a lot of injuries. Jer was under huge pressure at the start of the year with injuries, and you know, long term, going down the home straight in the Leinster Championship, it was actually a positive, because he'd bred so many players through that he had a wee bit of strength and depth going down the home straight. And but it was so important, Jared, to stay in Division 2, and we made that milestone, and then to get that momentum in the Leinster Championship for our young boys at 14 and 15 and 16 to go out and see those scenes and experience them, then, you know, it's only good for the future. But yeah, the work, Jared, has been on a number of years now, and we've been trying to just do things slightly better, align things in terms of, you know, a collaboration of coaches where, you know, it's not one coach coming in and having his idea or his philosophy, that it's more of a Louth way where we have a blueprint or identity of how we'd like to play or how we'd like to bring young people up. And it's bringing minds together rather than separating. It's a collaboration. And, you know, it's only an idea, it's only a philosophy, but I think we're getting growth from it. I think, you know, we're realizing that, you know, we're not going to win every game, but we surely want to compete in every game, and we want to have a belief that we can be a really good version.
This week on Diverted.
Sí, well, you know, cuando tienes tiempo en Argentina es esencial para comer media luna todos los tiempos.
I tell the story of how my hitchhiking disaster led me to the family of Alexis McAllister.
Para nosotros también es un gran orgullo que mi hermano haya jugado con Maradona y Alexis, su hijo, haya jugado con Messi, que son los dos más grandes exponentes del fútbol mundial que dio la Argentina.
I also meet Dickie McAllister at the Buenos Aires Hurling Club, and we discover the national sport of Argentina, pato.
¿Anduviste en otro lado filmando pato ya o no?
Diverted, coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.
I think Harry McNulty might be on the line there now, and we can say good morning to you. Harry, good morning to you. How are you?
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me all right?
We can. How are you?
Been better, I suppose, but I'm all right.
Can you tell us a little bit about when your sense was that the Ireland men's sevens team might be on the chopping block? Because there's kind of been bits in the ether since David Yusufor announced that he was leaving. So when did you realise or think that it might realistically be the end for this group?
I think the writing on the wall would have been in and around just over halfway through the season, probably, just in terms of general support. And like, the results weren't going for the lads the way that they would have wanted to. Really tough start to the year. And they were down at the bottom of the table. And then there was the bottom four qualification that you have to go through. So you start thinking, right, if things don't start going the way for this team, then they're in bottom four relegation. Where would the IRFU go and what decisions would they make based around those results? And you would easily say that if the results didn't go right, then they would pull the plug on the program. And that was kind of always a sense. And then World Rugby's decision to change the qualification of the World Series took place in LA. I'm not sure if you're on the details of how that all happened, but basically the bottom four were meant to have an opportunity to qualify back into this year, but World Rugby decided to chop that and the bottom four automatically were relegated. Those discussions only started taking place in around February or March, and they moved the goalposts halfway through the season. So once those goalposts, or the sounds of those goalposts, were going to be changed and Ireland were down in the bottom four, it really started to shake the foundations, and that kind of decision was kind of showing itself.
So essentially this year, the team was playing for its life, and maybe if they'd stayed in the top tier, that might have been a stay of execution. Is it fair to say that maybe the IRFU saw the writing on the wall for this and had kind of started to let the air out of the sevens tires, either on purpose or by accident, where they weren't as committed to this program as they had been, certainly when Yusufor was there?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of both. As far as I'm aware, IRFU really wanted World Rugby to have a plan in place. And I think that World Rugby probably took too long to put plans in place. So the IRFU decided to not put any time and energy into supporting the team when they couldn't support World Rugby. So it was kind of a double-edged sword in that regard. But any decision that was being made that would put Ireland away and like make it easy to close up the program, I think played into the hands of the IRFU. They didn't by any accounts support the lads or the girls that much this season. Even there was tournaments where Ireland went with 13 men, but one or two of those players were injured and they didn't have anybody else to call in. They didn't bring anybody in from any of the other squads to really help try and boost the team when they went away for a tournament only for a week. I ended up playing for them in Cape Town. Now that was something different. That was, there was a salmonella outbreak that took place, but I think one of the tournaments, they had 13 men and their 13th going over was injured because they literally had nobody else to come and play when there's however many players in academy systems sitting on benches week in, week out that could for 1 week try and come and support and play with those lads. So I think there was very much a systematic agenda that was taking place throughout the season to make it an easy excuse.
To listen to this morning's Off the Ball breakfast in full, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.